Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at the world of wildlife here in our state with Scott Craven, UW Emeritus Wildlife Ecologist. I'm Larry Mueller. So happy to have you along today. And boy, there's lots of things we can cover. This is really the busy time of the year for wildlife, I think. Well, every time of the year is busy for wildlife, but
they're always doing something.
But I'll tell you what, it's busy time. We've got lots to talk about. You may have questions. You may have something you've observed and want to point on, or maybe have a question about something you've seen. Call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. And Scott, we do have a lot to talk about. It's such a great fall. I mean, the colors in southern Wisconsin were just outstanding.
Well, it was beautiful, and it still is. I mean, this is September like weather. It's not going to last much longer, and the leaves are pretty much down. But we happened to hit it right up in Price County at the cabin back second week in October. It was just spectacular, and it's been like that here for the last few days. And you just go outside and think, how could it be any nicer or prettier? And of course, from the wildlife perspective, you know, this is a time of year when reproduction's over, so most populations that there are at their peak going into the fall and winter and the hunting seasons, and everybody in an anthropomorphic sense, all the animals are out there either trying to get ready for winter, fatten up, leave, dig a den, do something so that they're ready for the oncoming less than desirable weather. And as a result, things are active.
Yeah.
There are still some breeding seasons going on, like the rut that you mentioned in the intro. So that's of interest, of course, to hunters, but it's it should be of critical interest to everybody who drives a vehicle, which is just about everybody.
I got an email yesterday from Jim over at the Ball Body Shop in Middleton, and they already have, as of yesterday, they had already had 5 deer hits in their shop.
Wow.
In the one shop.
Well, it's an expensive proposition, it's a stressful proposition, and it's potentially life-threatening, certainly for the deer and potentially for the driver. So during the rut, when the bucks throw caution to the wind for a relatively short period, motorists need to be alert, and it's not just the dawn and dusk situation we talk about at the rest of the year. At this time of year, those animals can be on the move and on the run 24/7. So
yeah,
be careful out there.
And we've got, you know, I haven't done any garden cleanup. It's been too nice, and suddenly it's going to turn, and then I'm going to be cursing myself for not getting all the work done. But I mean, I think it's, if you want to avoid some potential wildlife problems, not a bad idea to think about that now.
Well, the cleanup is certainly part of it in terms of, you know, making sure there isn't a lot of debris around that may attract things you don't want to attract. But another important part of it is anticipation and thinking back to what kinds of problems have I had in the past. You know, were the voles a big problem for the landscaping we replaced last spring? Or, you know, are we worried about rabbits doing something to our ornamental shrubbery? Are there deer in the neighborhood? Did I really fix that soffit board or that bit of loose fascia or the vent properly so that things can't get in there? Those are all things. It really behooves, I think, any homeowner to just go out on one of these remaining nice days and walk slowly around the house and look for any potential access point, from the smallest hole or crevice where the house sits on the sill plate to the highest point where a utility cable enters, or the flashing on the chimney, or the ridge vents, or the box vents, or whatever might be a possible access point for small mammals or, you know, birds that may still be around for the winter that can cause you some problems.
Yeah.
And these things get in and cause problems in the insulation, cause problems with the electrical wiring, and it's just good common sense and property management. And on the outside front, protecting your fruit trees, protecting your ornamentals with hardware cloth or tree guards or whatever, where you've had problems in the past, it'll make you sleep better at night throughout the long winter. So
there you go. We had a photo, and we always encourage photos on our Facebook page. If you have a wildlife photo, send it into our Facebook page. Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. And Scott, I'm going to ask you to lean over and go. I'll give you a different microphone to use, maybe. We had a Carl from Wisconsin Dells says, my neighbor got this fisher on his trail cam a week ago, about 20 inches long, coming in to drink water. And it looks like a fisher.
That's because it is a fisher. But I was, from my distance and with my failing eyesight, I was looking at the little hand symbol from the cursor saying, what is that eye back there? But it's actually the fisher in the foreground.
So yeah, that's got fishers, I mean, in the Wisconsin Dells area.
That's what it is. And the reality is, and we've talked about it a little bit before, over the last, five, six, 7 years, there have been increasing numbers of fisher sightings in southern Wisconsin and certainly in central Wisconsin. And the growth and expansion area for fishers now seems to be at the southern edge of the northern forest and into the driftless area, where they seem to have stabilized, or, you know, maybe even a little downturn in the heart of the northern third of the state where they first exploded. And I think they maybe overshot the mark a little bit, and now things have settled out. But they certainly are moving south, and there's pretty good evidence there's at least one in Wisconsin Dells. So
there we go. Judy in Racine has a question. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Could you elaborate about skunk behavior? My little dog got skunked a while back. And I wondered if skunks hibernate. Is there ever a safe time? I always smell before I let him out, but one night it didn't work.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of these kind of mid-sized mammals, things like possums, raccoons, skunks, and so forth, will, during really nasty stretches of weather, extreme cold or stormy conditions, they'll just disappear. And they're in a den, they're under a deck, they're under a porch, there's some secure place, and they stay out of harm's way. But given the predictions that we're seeing for kind of an El Nino-driven winter here, which may mean some moderate or warm spells, most of those animals will be out and about foraging and looking around. The true hibernators, like the ground squirrels and the jumping mice and the woodchucks and so forth, will not, generally speaking, except on February 2nd, as far as the groundhogs are concerned. But for those other animals, give it a warm snap, and you'll see it in your driving with skunks that are not skunks, possibly skunks, but certainly possums and things that didn't make it across the road. That'll be an indication that they're out and about. So in really cold, nasty weather, you probably don't have a great deal to worry about, unless they've taken up den residence underneath your outbuilding or detached garage or deck or what have you. But in moderate weather, and especially a warm spell when it gets above freezing, those animals will be out and about. So you still need to exercise a little bit of caution. And if it's an ongoing problem and you know that the skunk is residing in your woodpile or under your shed, then it may be time to get an animal control specialist in there to remove said skunk, and then you can rest peacefully with your dog.
There you go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Somebody else in Madison had a little trouble with their little dog that was attacked by a coyote.
The coyote issue has surfaced again in a big way, and there's been lots of rhetoric about it in the local media, and it's certainly a problem, but it means
a little more vigilance.
A little more vigilance on the part of pet owners to try and avoid it, because the thought of, you know, everybody said, well, let's get rid of the coyotes, but people have been trying to rid certain areas of the country of coyotes for generations, and they've been singularly unsuccessful. So that's not in the cards.
Well, John in Waukesha, what's on your mind? Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, I'm up north grouse hunting, but on September 26th, my wife took a photo of an obviously newborn fawn in our backyard in Waukesha. I mean, there's no question in my mind it's a newborn. It wasn't much bigger than my short hair, and it had little bitty ears and lots of spots. Really had not much fear of my wife as she took the photos, and I'm wondering how unusual that is to see a newborn in the end of September.
Oh. Well, it's unusual, but much like any natural event like bird migration or the blooming of flowers or the dropping of fawns, it's kind of a normal distribution of bell curve of those birth dates, starting with, I think when I was working, the earliest account that I ever heard was, I want to say I'm going from memory now, but it was early April when a lady called from Maple Bluff here in Madison and said that she had, it was either twins or triplets, fawns, in her bed of tulips in early April, like the first week of April. Now, the peak of fawn drop is generally either side of June 1st, late May, early June, depending on where you are in the state. So early April is 2 months early. A fawn, the way you describe it, that was probably dropped in August to be in the condition that you saw in September is 2 months the other side. So those are the tales of the distribution, not unheard of, but they're darn scarce compared to when there are fawns all over the place again.
A month old when it was so small, and my wife said, obviously kind of shaky on its legs initially,
That could have even been a September birth, and that's even more unusual, but not unheard of.
Yep, not unheard of. And it's and do you live in town, John?
I live in just outside the city of Waukesha. I'm up north now, Langley County grouse hunting. That's where I was when my wife sent me the photo. But this is right on the edge of the city of Waukesha.
Yeah.
Of most importance in this issue, are you seeing any grouse?
Not very many, I'll tell you. Not as many as last year. I managed to miss one about a half an hour ago.
Well, I only bring it up because I've been pleasantly surprised, and a lot of other in our area in Price County, where we expected, you know, still headed toward the bottom, maybe at the bottom in the cycle. But holy cow, we were seeing lots of birds standing along the road and flying across the road, and quite a few flushes when folks were in the woods. So I'm hopeful that we've overall in the state, it's always a patchy distribution, but maybe we're starting to turn the corner, and over the next 4 or 5 years, things will get better and better. So good luck out there.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. This is one of my favorite bird to eat. Grouse.
Oh,
I love grouse.
Now, since the last time we were on, I think I was hunting prairie chickens in western Kansas, and I did bring – so we had a – we had a little game feed up at the cabin, and my son and son-in-law had gotten a grouse and some woodcock, and we had grouse, rough grouse, side by side with prairie chicken.
Wow.
I'll take the rough grouse any day, any day of the year. So I agree with you. It's hard on the dinner table. It's hard to beat a rough grouse.
Yeah, for sure. Vivian in Green Bay, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Hello. I've got a question, but first a comment. I was raking leaves 4:30 yesterday in the town of Amberg, Marinette County, on the Menominee River. Heard some geese, looked up, thought they were a little late, counted them, 13, mused to myself, that unlucky number. Then I looked in the other direction over the river, and I saw three more birds, and I thought, oh, that's good, we're up to 16. But the three over the river were trumpeter swans.
Oh, cool.
So they are back.
Cool.
I didn't think they'd be here this early, but they did their trumpeting, and definitely three beautiful trumpeters. Okay, my question is, I do put suet in a tennis ball hopper, hang it up in the tree as high as I can get with a ladder with some U-bolts.
Yeah.
So I can get 20, 25 pounds of suet in there, which means it'll last about a month in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
But I have poorly estimated the activity of black bear. So am I too early? You know, I've been too early and I've been too late.
They're not asleep yet.
No, they're not asleep yet, and it seems to be getting later and later. But it's not uncommon now to see them during the deer season, the latter part of November. So I don't think, and with this weather we've had, coupled with the normal progression of them going into denning, I think if you put your suet out now, it's at some risk.
Okay.
And bears are surprised for what looks like a big, bulky, kind of awkward animal. They're pretty agile and pretty capable.
Yeah,
so
they sure are.
You might be tempted to wait a little while.
Yeah. Thanks, okay. Viv. Appreciate Vivian. I appreciate your call. You can call in, too. The number to call, we have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234.
Did she say tennis ball hopper? Do you know what that is?
Tennis ball hopper. It's a, I think it's a round, a big round ball that has, with screens and the, you can load it up with. A bowling ball 20, hopper is
20,
more,
20
is,
pounds of suet. Well,
maybe tennis ball hopper may be the name of the hopper. I don't know.
That was a new one on me. So
yeah.
Anyway,
let me repeat again. Join in at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Scott Craven, Meredith's wildlife ecologist with UW Extension and UW-Madison Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. Glad to have him on, and certainly glad to have you calling in and sending emails and photos. I love the wildlife photos that we get, so I hope we get some more of those. In fact, I'm going to just check on that, Scott. In the meantime, let's go to Lee in Green Bay. Lee, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning. My question is, where have our Hungarian partridge gone? Back in the late 60s, early 70s, I grew up around DePere. We used to have a lot of nice little coveys of the Huns. Mm-hmm. Where have they went?
Well, first of all, the stronghold for Huns in the state was from Green Bay, you know, Brown County, southern Door County, down along the Lake Michigan shoreline and inland maybe to, say, the Lake Winnebago area and down in that strip. And they were pretty common in open farm country with some cover, sort of the kind of habitat you might expect quail in. But there were enough of them that it supported a bit of hunting interest. When I started at the university in 1979, during the 1980s, some of my DNR colleagues were still sponsoring, I'm trying to remember the name of it now, but it was a group Hun hunt in that area just south of DePere, and a lot of people would kind of sign up, and they'd be assigned properties around the area, and then everybody would gather at a German restaurant that I don't remember the location of and have a big game dinner. It was a fantastic event, and everybody saw Huns. But to answer your basic question, where have they gone? I think they've gone the way of some of our other farmland wildlife in terms of quail, pheasants, Huns, and you know, perhaps other bird species as well that have suffered in part from some changes in the agricultural economy and also some particularly nasty winters over the last decade or so that have taken out, I mean, use pheasants as a broader example. Excuse me. talking to one of my now retired DNR wildlife colleagues about pheasant hunting in southern Wisconsin just yesterday, and we were talking about the amount of pressure that the public lands hunting areas were getting, which is incredible. But his conclusion was, well, it's to be expected because there's just virtually no huntable wild pheasant population right now compared to maybe 4 years ago on my own property in southern Dane County where I have some restored prairie where it was pretty common to have rooster pheasants coming to the bird feeder all winter, and they were a fairly common sight. And I've not heard or seen a bird now for 3 or 4 years since couple of those winters and those, I forget what year it was, but the wet, icy, cold spring that we had very late just took
that
them out.
Did it. Yeah.
And I think the Huns have gone the same way. Mm. The advantage may be a few birds. They're sometimes used on shooting preserves and game farms to supplement pheasant hunting opportunity. And occasionally some of those birds leave the properties and may start a nucleus of some expansion when and if we get the right conditions. But I think that's the basic explanation. Have you seen any changes that you attribute this to, or are you just wondering about the cause of the disappearance?
Well, I think a lot has to do, I don't know if the genetically modified crops, corn, soybeans has done anything.
I doubt if it's the genetically modified. I'll tell you what could be more of a problem is no fence rows anymore.
Yeah, I mean, those, when I said agricultural changes, you know, larger farms, fence rows disappearing or being cleaned up, better and more aggressive use of herbicides to keep the crop. I understand all this. I understand a bit about how the agricultural system works, but some of those changes that have made croplands more productive in terms of yield have made them less productive in terms of wildlife, and that's the way it is.
Yeah. And, yeah, in cornfields, there's no weeds anymore.
That's correct.
Or weed seeds then. So, Lee, thanks for calling. Bill in McQuanago, your turn. Hi, Bill. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Great show. I was up raking leaves over the weekend up in the Lac de Flambeau area, and I saw what I thought was a loon land out in the lake. And putting binoculars on, I'm sure it looked like a loon, but it looked like a lot of white on it. Usually they appear way darker to me when I see them. Usually, is that a young bird, or any ideas what that might have been?
Well, even a young bird would be pretty dark, but a loon silhouette or shape is pretty distinctive. So I can't think of anything else white that might be a case of mistaken identity. So it seems like we'd then lean toward the more likely explanation of a bird that's leucistic or albino or whatever the case may be. There are a couple of genetic traits that lead to white plumage in a lot of different bird species. And that I've never actually seen it or heard about it in a loon, but it's certainly possible.
Yeah, we see them all the time. It landed like a loon and had a silhouette with the beak and all that. So I'm pretty sure it was a loon. It was the front looked awful white to me. So I had a question about that. That's all.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
very cool.
Good sighting.
Yeah.
And did you get
sighting.
A picture by any chance?
No, it was too far out, and I had crappy binoculars with me. But no, I did not get a picture.
Okay.
All right. That'd be nice. Boy, if you can get one, that'd be wonderful to have for sure. Thanks, Bill. Lisa in Marinette County, your turn. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. We live in just outside of Amberg, kind of central eastern part of the county. And we were walking through the woods behind our house, and we're really kind of out. And our dog flushed something past us in the woods, and it came. I mean, it was going like crazy running past us. It was bigger than a rabbit, but it was smaller than a deer. It sounded heavy, it went past us so fast we couldn't focus on it to figure out what it was, but it was dark. And it sounded like hooves hitting the ground because it was so, it sounded real heavy. It was too small to be a big pig, but are there wild pigs up in our area? It could have been a young one.
They're not supposed to be, but
there are a couple of issues. A few years ago, there was a big fuss about the potential of wild or what are called feral pigs or feral hogs getting established in Wisconsin. It was more over in the west central part of the state. And the agencies involved, USDA's Wildlife Services and the DNR, had a very vigorous program to try and eliminate the ones that were documented and make sure people realize that either intentionally releasing these animals for whatever purpose they had in mind, or fostering them or protecting them in any way was potentially very problematic because around the country, feral hogs are an unbelievably destructive and complicated management problem. So that aggressive control and getting the word out to hunters who were in the woods for other purposes to try and eliminate these animals if they could seemed to work. And there's not been much talk about them lately, but it's quite possible that anywhere, either someone may have released an animal or two, or lots of people do have pigs, and they get away, and they become feral. This was quite a few years ago, but on the farm that I've hunted on for years, just west of Madison, we had a sow get loose from a neighboring farm, and she had a litter on our farm. There were 10 or 11 piglets, and this was in the spring when we discovered them. By fall, the piglets weighed 70 or 80 pounds.
Wow.
But the amount of rooting and destruction that they did was, it was incredible. And they were finally eliminated in a variety of ways, and the sow was eventually recaptured or returned. But it could be an animal that simply escaped and is out running around. It could be an animal that someone intentionally put out. I hope that's not happening anymore. But it could have been a pig. But it could have been some. Did you look for tracks or any other evidence?
Oh, I was so startled that I didn't even think to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I could have been anything else too. I mean, that's the only thing we could think of. But I haven't noticed any rooting or anything. That's what kind of threw me.
Well, I mean, we'll never know. That's one of the great mysteries of being outside, and it's one of the things that people are why people are fascinated by wildlife. So let's just leave it that it could have been a pig. There could have been a number of different sources, but as far as I know, there's no particular feral hog population in your area that you should be concerned about.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling, Lisa. Appreciate it very much. And Karen, thank you for calling. Karen and Madison, your turn.
Yeah, I'm driving towards Black Earth, so I could lose you in the hills out here. But my husband got a shed, and he's so happy to have a shed.
Everybody should have their own shed.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, then when you get the shed, then you have to stain it, and then you have to do something else to it. And then the latest thing that we thought we should do is put a skirt on it, because I'm afraid of animals burrowing under it in the winter.
Yeah.
So we did quarter-inch mesh, like chicken wire, and we nailed it to the bottom, and then we turned it so that it comes out about 4 inches from the shed, and then we backfilled it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else should we do? Because I really don't want a skunk in there.
So the shed was apparently up off the ground surface a little bit.
Yeah, it was made by MATC, and by the way, they do beautiful work.
Okay.
Uh-huh. But it had two sort of baseboards on the front and the back that it rests on.
Mm-hmm.
But there's room on the sides, and there's room above those baseboards where something could get trapped in snowy conditions underneath.
Well, I think you did.
You did the right thing.
I think you did exactly the right thing. If a shed or outbuilding were resting on the ground or even on a slab that it didn't extend out over, then my suggestion would have been, if you just started from scratch, to trench it out around the building, and then put a galvanized wire barrier in, maybe, as deep as you felt you wanted to trench without making a huge project out of it, but certainly 8 or 10 inches, a foot would be even better. Put an outward bending flange on it the way you did, so that the profile of the wire was actually L-shaped with the foot of the L coming out from the building, and then fill it back up. And then any animal that digs down along the wire hits the flange, and that's usually enough to discourage any kind of entry. So I think you're good.
Okay. A friend had said there was something you could put in your shed that you can buy at, like, a hardware store that gives off a scent I didn't know what that was. I didn't know if that was worth pursuing.
Well, the physical barrier part of it, if you've done that right, then if they can't physically get in, they can't get in. If you want to double down on it, there are things like naphthalene, moth crystals, that most mammals find offensive. Same with ammonia scent. And there are other types of animal repellents that you could get at a garden center or whatnot. But I don't think that's necessary, given what you've done.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Open lines get you on pretty quickly. And just going to our Facebook page, go there and take a look right now. Our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. Chris sent us a photo, early morning visits to the freshly harvested cornfield in Vernon County. Looks like a record book buck.
It's a pretty nice deer.
Yeah, it's a pretty...
Where exactly in Vernon County was that?
Very, very nice photo of a really good-sized buck. So that's certainly worth a look. We have an email question from Lori. He says, I've spotted a bald eagle over Lake Wingra and Wingra Creek four times since late summer until now. Are they here to stay or just passing through? Well, actually, there's a nest over in that area, isn't there, Scott? Wingra?
Yeah, there was an osprey nest over there, too. But as long as there's open water,
yeah.
the winter weather, if there's open water where the eagles can find fish or food source, then the winter weather isn't much of a problem for them. So where any given eagle may choose to spend the winter is up for grabs. But certainly all along the Wisconsin River at Pettenwell and Prairie du Sac and the other spots where people normally go eagle watching, they'll be there all winter.
Yeah, for sure. We have Kathy and Racine up next. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. It was interesting when you were talking about the pheasant population earlier, because I used to see them, you know, driving. Hadn't seen one in a very long time, but this past Sunday, my husband and I were driving up Highway 75, kind of western Kenosha, western Racine County,
mm-hmm.
and sure enough, one crossed the road right in front of us. Beautiful ringneck pheasant.
Oh, it's fun
to
see.
They're beautiful birds, and this time of year, because the DNR is in the process of stalking, have been for the last 2 weeks and will be for a few more weeks, putting some 75,000 rooster pheasants out on public properties throughout the southern two-thirds of the state. It's become more common to see a bird that was raised at the Point at Game Farm all of a sudden, where the heck am I, and be wandering around where people can see them. So beyond providing some hunting opportunity, they are as beautiful as any bird you can see. And if some of those birds meant for providing hunting opportunity allow people to see them out moving around, then so much the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was just beautiful to see.
Thanks,
so,
Kathy. Yeah, appreciate the call. PJ in Barron County, on to you now. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I usually know better than to plant white cedars out where deer can get at them, but I find myself with about 10 of them on my property. And they're really starting to take root and look really nice, so I want to keep the deer off them for the winter. What do you have for suggestions?
With only 10 trees, the stuff I started working on my fruit trees yesterday, and I just can't grow my dwarf fruit trees. I can't get them up past the deer without fencing them. So I've got a roll or several rolls, 50-foot rolls of 6-foot welded wire fencing. You know, it's about an inch and a half by 3-inch mesh. You can go with whatever mesh size you want. But it's easy to nip off the sections with a bolt cutter and then bend those back to essentially make a ring big enough to go around the tree that the deer can't reach through or over. And I really think that kind of physical barrier is in the long run superior to anything else you can do. There are certainly repellents you could apply to the tree, but you know, you get lousy rainy weather. If it's rainy rather than snowy this winter, you have to keep applying this stuff. Some of it's pretty expensive. You right. miss it for a week, and all of a sudden your tree looks more like a palm tree than a white cedar, and that's not good. So I think the fence is the best way to go.
I appreciate the advice. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Pain, a lot of work, but you know what? If you want the trees.
It's a one-shot deal, and it's easy to take the stuff down in the spring and let them grow.
Brendan in Madison, thanks a lot for calling.
Hi. I was hoping you guys could talk about what the DNR is doing about elk populations in Wisconsin. I've heard that the DNR released about 30 elk around the Black River Falls area, and I was just wondering what the chances are that a long-term herd will last in Wisconsin.
Well, that's a pretty involved question, actually, Brandon. So let's give you the Reader's Digest version on this. You know, the elk restoration program began when the DNR got 25 individuals from Michigan back in 1995, and those were placed up in the Clam Lake area.
Yeah.
And that herd, I think, has grown to some 200 animals, give or take a few. But it's been beset by all sorts of problems, from highway mortality to predation. The bottom line is that over the, it's been 20 years now, that they expected that the herd would be much larger now, but it isn't. There was some interest and pressure in, okay, let's hedge our bets a little bit and think about some other areas where we can do essentially the same thing. And the Black River Falls release just occurred back in early September. Those were animals that came to Wisconsin from Kentucky, of all places. It turns out Kentucky's elk restoration went nuts out in the reclaimed coal fields, and they've got lots of elk. So I think the agreement is that Kentucky will provide up to 50 elk a year for 3 years, this past year being one of them, and that those animals were planned to both start a new herd around Black River Falls and also to augment the herd, the original herd, up by Clam Lake. And that's what they're in the process of doing. I think, they didn't catch 50. I think they caught 28. I'm kind of going from memory here, Larry, but I think they caught about 28, brought them up here. They had a disease problem and lost five or six animals, lost a couple others to other problems. I think the 28 dwindled to 19, but then while they were in captivity over the summer, four or five calves were born. So I think ultimately somewhere in the neighborhood of 23 or 24 animals were released. And they're now monitoring those, and I think making plans to get back down to Kentucky to get another batch next year. So that's kind of the situation. The elk were a native species. They'd like to see them back again. They're popular with the public, and they're working hard to try and expand the population in the Clam Lake area and start a new one in Black River Falls.
There we go.
That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Scott Craven, our guest today.
I'm guessing there's a pretty good summary of all that on the DNR website if Brandon or anybody else wanted to check it out.
Good idea. And here's to remind you that Scott Craven is a wildlife ecologist with emeritus professor in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Scott Craven, wildlife ecologist. Always great to have Scott come by. If questions or experience to share, call us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question and or a photo, wildlife photo, on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Judy in New Berlin has a comment. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry and Scott. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. I had an interesting experience this Monday morning, about 6:45 a.m. I had just come home, pulled into my garage, and I just stepped out. It was light to see, take a look at what was happening outside. And my property kind of abuts a wooded and a park area.
Yep.
And about 30 feet away stood two large coyotes. Now, they were husky. They were not scraggly looking or mangy. I've seen the mangy ones here before. But they stood for, and I kind of stared them down, and I stood there about a minute. And then one headed east and the other one headed west, so they walked away slowly. But I was talking to some friends of mine, and one of the fellows said he thinks maybe it was a coy wolf. Would they be here in southeast Wisconsin, or was it just a healthy, looking coyotes at this time of year because they probably have lots of food?
Most likely a healthy coyote.
Most likely just a healthy coyote, but, when you say husky.
They were full. I mean, their coats looked nice. They weren't scraggly looking at all like you usually see the coyotes.
Well, the only reason I'm hesitating is when someone says, no matter where they are in the state, I saw a really husky coyote. Well, the really husky-looking version of a coyote isn't a coyote, it's a wolf.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And, that's highly unlikely given your setting, but
right. It's
not... It's not impossible. Okay. I mean, wolves have been seen in virtually every county, and hey, two or three weeks ago when I was up in Price County. I finally got to see one on the side of the road, which was pretty neat. It was a black one, though, so it was pretty easy to make the identification.
Yeah, well, it was really neat. And, of course, I didn't have a camera readily available, but it would have been I could have gotten a good shot, actually.
You know, on a cool morning this time of year where they're getting their full winter coats and looking pretty fluffy and hanging out, it may have been just as you described, two really nice-looking, healthy coyotes.
Right.
So we'll assume that's the case, but you can never rule out some things either.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Speaking of wolves, Adams County, there was potential. A man said he was approached by three wolves, and he happened to have a pistol and wounded one of them, I guess.
Well, yes, I'm not sure what to say about that, Larry, and, you know, rather than get people too excited and speculating, I guess that you need to follow the media accounts. They've been covering it really thoroughly in Wisconsin Outdoor News, and there are just some strange twists and turns to the story, but it's in the process of being investigated. Right after the account of the encounter or attack or whatever you want to call it, there were people there who know wolves, and wolves apparently were involved in something, but it's a bit fuzzy yet what exactly happened.
Okay.
So stay tuned for more on that.
Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
This is more of an experience than a question.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, my wife and I were driving over to Hartman Creek State Park to go hiking.
Mm-hmm.
And we were driving down Highway W near the interstate, and we noticed a whole bunch of birds flying into a field. And when we got close, we stopped, and here this whole field was full of sandhill cranes. And so we just sat and watched for a while. And then there was another flock came in from the northeast, a big flock, and all of a sudden all these birds in the field, everybody started to fly, and they met that flock, and they started just, you know, meandering around, and it was so subtle. All of a sudden they were really organized. They started to organize and fly in a circle. And then they started to spiral up. It was right over, I don't know if there was a thermal in the field. They started to spiral up to their flying altitude, and then they all flew around up there for a while. And there was just no, you couldn't see anything, but all of a sudden they just flew off to the southwest.
Yeah, well, so, it's a cool thing to see. Sandhill cranes are spectacular. They're big. And they're amazingly graceful. And if they're calling, then it's really cool because there's no call, to me at least.
No.
I like loons and a variety of other. I like all bird calls, but hearing cranes going over when I'm out hunting or out working in the yard, it's a pretty neat thing. And they are big birds, so they'd like to be aided by thermals. And if things were right for them, and they took off and spiraled up and caught the right wind, they were out of there. And you were in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, if it would have been 10 minutes or 20 minutes, either way, we'd have missed them. And the sound was fantastic.
Yeah, I bet. Oh, thank you very much for calling.
You know, at the outset of the program, you mentioned folks sharing sightings and so forth, and I think that what we're hearing here bears out the notion that this is a pretty neat time of year to be outside.
Oh,
there
yeah.
are lots of things going on.
You know, the bird song I like, call I like, is in, when you're in northern Wisconsin, say in the Shawangunk National Forest, and ravens call. That is really a cool song.
I always stop when I hear ravens up at the cabin. Where is that bird? And that's ravens, loons, cranes, pileated woodpeckers. They're just lots of neat bird calls. And I think if people are curious enough, it's easy enough to figure out what they are.
Chuck and Toma, thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning. Just an observation. We have photographic evidence just west of Toma of a fissure 18 or 20 inches long and two bobcats, one of which has young.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And that is cool. And like the fissure, bobcats are another animal that seem to have been, over the past few years, moving into the southwestern part of the state, the Driftless area and whatnot, and starting to populate that area. So
yeah.
More evidence.
Thanks a lot, Chuck, for calling. Appreciate it. And Marcus in Green Bay, what's on your mind?
I have a question about, I live in the east side of Green Bay. It's a wooded area. It's Baird's Creek Parkway. So I think, I'm pretty sure there may be coyotes around here. I see tracks in this area. I don't know if it's a coyote. But anyway, there's this brush thicket, and I'm questioning, my question has to do with the den, like who lives in here. It's a thicket, a brush, there's vines. It's real, real dense, and there's a trail leading in and out of it. Almost like a little tunnel going in there. It's about the size, the thicket is about the size of a pup tent or bigger. And I never wanted to poke around in there, but who do you think lives in that den? Like what kind of animal might be going in and out of there in this brush thicket?
Well, there are, you know, there are a number of things that might have dug a den in there. If your basic question is, do coyotes have a den like foxes do, then yes, they do. It would be a little larger and more obvious. Sometimes these things, particularly foxes, but coyotes occasionally as well, like to have their den opening. Foxes like to dig in a hillside, for example, so they have kind of a commanding view of the area. Coyotes maybe a little less so, but a thicket where there's some cover and protection for the identity of their den is probably a good idea. Other possibilities, you know, badger, woodchuck den. There are only a few animals that really excavate a major den, but coyotes a possibility.
Let me just clarify one thing. I don't see any signs of digging or tunneling. It's just it's like the trail is on the surface in a flat area, not on a hill. And this thicket, this brush thicket, is so dense, you know, it's almost you can't see through it at all. So there's no signs of digging, but some animal goes in and out of there all the time. So, would a coyote have a den where he didn't dig because this, you know, the brush thicket was so thick, or do they always dig?
A number of animals will use a brushy thicket like that for some cover, and if they use a particularly an obvious pathway over time, it will get worn down and be fairly obvious. I think there are two things you can do here. If you're curious about this and you visit the site, then take a little rake or tool with you, and where this pathway enters the brushy thicket, scratch it up a little bit so there's some loose soil. Or take a little bag of sand in with you and spread that there so that you can see what tracks are that are going in. And you know, whether it's a coyote track, a rabbit track, or whatever, those will be fairly obvious. You can figure it out that way. If it's on is this not on your own property?
It's a public parkway, okay. And I'm going to be walking by there today. So
well, I mean, you can scratch that up a little bit, look for some tracks, look for other sign that might give you some clues, a dropping. If for example, I looked in there and there's a couple of bird wings on the ground or some bones or whatever, then you rule out things like rabbit and woodchuck and whatnot that would not be predatory like that. So you should be able to garner some other clues. If it were on your own property or a secure site where you weren't worried about it, then borrow or
trail
rent
cam.
Or buy and sit. It's a perfect spot to put up a trail camera, and all of a sudden the images on that camera will solve the mystery for you without any question. But I wouldn't put something like that on public land.
No, it'll be gone.
Yeah, I know what you mean. So, yeah, thanks. And winter's coming, so I'll be even seeing more tracks. So,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Much,
yeah.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. I had a friend who had trail cams in the what he thought was the middle of nowhere in the Shawamigan National Forest, and even had them secured in such a way, you know, they were locked in place and you weren't going to get out of there unless the person had bolt cutters or something. And someone did come in and must have had bolt cutters because they were gone in the middle of nowhere. So be careful about that. And Ted and Toma, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I just got a quick story about some squirrels looking out my front window to a vacant lot across the road. I saw a squirrel go up one of the trees, an old elm tree, and pretty good-sized tree, go out on a limb and kind of he's dangling there and swinging up and down, and he jumped, I don't know, 4 or 5 feet to the next tree. It was kind of neat. It looked like the dog jumping in the dells, you know. But anyway,
yeah,
when he got to the other side, that branch dropped down, you know, 5-6 feet, kind of like just because it was way out on the end, and it kind of sprung back up, and he hung on there, and then he just took off to the inside of the tree. And I thought, that was really kind of neat. I thought, whatever, you know. And it went down the tree to the ground, back over to the original tree, went up, and did it again. And I thought, now, he's just having a good time. I don't think there's any other reason he should do that. That was 4 or 5 years ago, and now there's two squirrels that will chase each other on that same thing. And are these guys just having fun, or is there any other reason they would be on that?
Nah, I think they're having fun.
Well, on trees with spindly branches like elms, which are very dangly, if there are seeds that the animals are interested in as a food source, they'll go out on the dangly branches and cut them off, let them fall to the ground, and then eventually go down and collect what they're after. So you will occasionally see them going up and down a tree. What the heck are they up to? And they're very capable about jumping from tree to tree, catching a limb, bouncing around. But it's also possible that, you know, some of these animals, especially young ones, you see fawns frolicking, otters fooling around.
They are
just having a good time.
And thanks a lot for calling, Ted. Appreciate it. Scott Craven will be with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with Scott. You stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at the world of wildlife with Scott Craven, wildlife ecologist. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Questions or experiences, information to share? Call us at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Scott, lots of calls, lots of emails. Laura from New Berlin was wondering if you'd heard of the mass antelope die-off. Must have been out west. And what your thoughts were if you'd heard anything. I have not heard anything about that.
Nor have I.
Okay.
So I guess our thoughts are limited on that matter.
All right. So there we go. Joan wondered about the snowy owl eruption and the status of Bob White's in Wisconsin. The snowy owl eruption...
Well, apparently another invasion is in progress. The last time I saw any information, there had been at least 50 sightings around the state, and this was a week or so ago. So they're coming back, and that's, I think, 4 years out of the last five,
yeah,
or something like that. So for folks who are fans of seeing these big, spectacular white owls, they're back.
Yeah. And Bob White's, the quail?
The same kind of problem as the pheasants and the huns and whatnot. We're on the edge of their range. Winters have not been very conducive to help them out. And, you know, hopefully things will turn around and we'll see them again. I miss hearing an occasional whistling bird on my property, but I haven't heard one for quite a few years now.
Tom and Humbert wondered, how old do fawns need to be to make it in the event the mother is shot or goes away?
Oh, there were people concerned about that back in the days when there was a fair bit of shooting of deer in the summer on agricultural damage control permits. But
yeah.
I think for the most part, you know, by the time it's a couple months, they're likely to be okay.
Yeah. Bob and Claybanks, thanks a lot for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having the show. And
sure.
Scott, thanks for being on. Possible global climate change indication. I saw a meadowhawk dragonfly yesterday up in Door County.
Huh.
Wow.
It's kind of late for them.
There's been a lot of just the last few days. I mean, the insect life that's still out is surprising, and we've been watching with great interest. We've got about a dozen green frogs in our little ornamental pond, and every day I think, oh, those frogs are going down for the year. They're going to try and make it through on the bottom, and holy cow, it's warm enough. They're all back sitting there on the rocks looking around, wondering what's going on. So there have been a lot of interesting things for late in the season.
Last week, I was walking along Lake Michigan in the south end of the county, and guess you'd call it, of mergansers surrounded by gulls. And there's probably 50 to 75 of each. And the mergansers seemed like they were chasing the gulls out of the center of this raft. And we took a canoe out to take a look and see if there was any fish that were hanging around below the surface. And no sign of any, but the water was kind of cloudy. Just wondered if you'd ever heard of anything like that, if you have any idea what they might have been doing.
Hmm. So the mergansers were acting aggressively toward the gulls.
Yeah, it seemed like they were kind of flying in, flying off and then flying back in occasionally, and it seemed like the gulls were reacting to it by moving a little further to the outside of this kind of circular raft that they had created.
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't have much for you there, Bob. I don't know what was going on, but I would have thought that if the mergansers were working a school of alewives or something, and there were scraps or bits or pieces or whatever else, that the gulls might have been trying to get in on the action, and the mergansers might have taken a dim view of that. But beyond that, I don't have much speculation for you.
That's probably as good a guess as any, for sure. There you go. Thanks, Bob. Lynn in Juneau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. We're talking about animals playing. A few years ago, my husband and I were out walking near our property, and we saw two young weasels sliding down some old fence posts, taking turns just like little children on a slide, coming, sliding down, running around to the back, climbing up, sliding down again. Doing this we must have watched them for about 5 minutes or so. A little bit later, another one poked its head up from behind and yelled something sort of along the lines of, "It's time to come in, children." And the little ones ran off and to their mom.
Wonderful
well,
story.
Well, that's a neat story. And you know, weasels, other members of the weasel family, like otters and mink, the young ones are notorious for being pretty frolicky and seeming to enjoy life. So that was a neat thing to see.
Yeah. Thanks, Lynn. Yeah. Great story.
You're
welcome. Yeah, I love that story. Robin in Eau Claire County. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I live on a farm, and we have some kind of low wetland areas, and we also have a small pond, and we've noticed a lot of beaver working there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really doing a wonderful job. They're thinning out poplar trees that are too close together, and thus far, they haven't caused any problems, but we would love to observe them. They've dug canals close to where they work, where they are working on trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we are not sure. We'd love to watch them, but I don't know what the right time of day would be.
Well, with most animals, the peak of activity is early and late rather than midday.
Okay.
And no, I think what you bring up is a good opportunity to encourage people who have any feature on their property where wildlife tends to be, any species of wildlife tends to be active, whether it's beavers in a pond or a wetland with a lot of waterfowl in it, or the edge of a field where turkeys tend to display, or any other neat things to watch. That it would be, I think it would facilitate your enjoyment of those beavers to, first of all, provide yourself with a nice trail down to the pond so you can walk down there both comfortably and quietly. And then where you've got a good viewing area, even if that needs to be enhanced a little bit with a little pruning, either put yourself a nice little Leopold bench, which is easy to construct, where you can sit and watch, or, better yet, this time of year, all manner of tree stands, deer stands for hunting are on sale for relatively little money, and you can get a two-person tree stand that you could securely attach to a tree overlooking your pond, and with an easy approach, have a spot where you can just climb up in there and make yourself comfortable and sit there and watch whatever's going on around that pond with little chance of alerting the beavers or anything else that's there to see.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And getting up off the ground a little bit so you can see over the cattails or whatever else happens to be there will greatly facilitate your enjoyment of those animals.
Okay, yeah. Now when you say early or late, now with it getting dark earlier, Do they work into the? Do they work in the darkness or?
Probably not, but obviously your ability to see them is compromised at that point. But early and late is a moving target with the changes of daylight savings time and sunrise and sunset and so forth. So
Okay. You
just have to accommodate that.
Okay, we've driven out there with the four-wheeler, but obviously we're announcing our arrival.
Yeah.
Well, you can go partway. The nice thing about many of these animals is that they if you're persistent at this, they habituate to the presence of people, just like geese in a city park that pay little attention to people there. And you may be able to strike a little bit of a balance with your local beavers, and they'll get used to doing their thing with you sitting there enjoying watching them.
Okay, well, I hope so. I do row a small rowboat around on the pond,
mm-hmm.
and they still are there, and they seem to be populating because they have one large beaver lodge, and mm-hmm. now they're starting another. So I'm assuming as they become populated, if they feel there are too many, do some move off to a new place?
The young ones will eventually move off or be driven off to a new habitat. But the other thing that we've talked about with some other listeners, that if you're fascinated with these animals, and you know, it should be easy to place a trail camera either near mm-hmm. the lodge or near some of the canals they've constructed to transport trees and whatnot, and you'll get some really cool pictures of them. And you'll also, because the cameras work 24/7 and are date stamped, you can decide exactly what the best time is to be down there to see what you want to see.
Yep, it's a very good point. Yeah, good luck. Thanks, Robin. Sounds like she's got some fun viewing ahead of her. Speaking of viewing, Larry Hill sent us three photos, wonderful photos. First is, he says, more than birds enjoy our feeder, and there's two deer eating on his bird feeder.
Yep.
And then he says, love that grape jelly is the title of that one. Well, that's a raccoon after his grape jelly. And then the top one is catbird. The fattest cat I've seen in quite a while at the drinking area there.
Yep, those are all good pictures. That's quite an elaborate feeding station.
Yeah.
Lots of different feeders.
And here's a picture from Trail Cam in Lafayette County. I'm trying to see what this is. Looks like a...
Looks like Mr. Bobcat.
Looks like Mr. Bobcat, yeah.
So, in Lafayette County. So there's further confirmation that these animals are moving down into the Southwest. In fact, you can't get any more Southwest and still be in Wisconsin, so...
that's exactly right. Wow. That's a pretty cool picture as well. These trail cams are just wonderful. That's so much fun. We have Karen in Wisconsin Rapids with a question for you, Scott. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
For about the last year, we've had an issue with gray squirrels that come onto our front cement steps, and I don't know if they're marking, but they urinate on it, and so it smells like a cat litter box.
Well, that's weird.
You're sure that, you know, I don't doubt the squirrels are crossing your steps, but you're sure it's the squirrels that are doing the urination?
Actually, we've seen them. One morning early, there were three of them out there, and then when they left, there were little puddles where they had been. So,
wow. Well, that's pretty good evidence.
Kind of annoying.
Well, I guess the first thing I would try is some type of odor-based repellent on or around the area that you might spray onto the steps, and this could be the aforementioned naphthalene flakes. Do you have pets or kids?
Yeah, we have a dog.
Yeah. You have to be a little careful with some of those things that would be commonly used, like naphthalene or ammonia. Those are both potential problems for a dog. The other option is to be a little more direct about it and get yourself a small live trap and just remove those squirrels that seem to be using that particular part of your home. Now, generally speaking, removing squirrels is an endless and thankless proposition because there may be way more than you think. However, in the case where there is a squirrel that's figured out how to chew on the trim of the living room window or a squirrel that's figured out how to get to the bird feeder, if you can target that individual or the two or three that seem to be involved, then you can use that technique. I'm just trying to think of what else you might put there that would discourage them.
Maybe it's a scent thing. I mean, you could probably use these odor eliminators, too, to get the scent off the cement.
If the scent is attracting further behavior, then there are some very powerful industrial deodorizers like hospital cleansers and that kind of thing that you could probably spray that down and get rid of or at least mask any squirrel odor so that they're not attracting such behavior in the future.
Okay, that's a great idea. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Jan in South Wayne. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Monday morning, I was out for a walk, and I live in the country, and I went past a pine tree, and there was a very, very vocal hoot owl in the tree.
Cool.
And I walked up to the tree, and of course, it fell silent, and I didn't hear it, nor could I see it, but that was on Monday, and being outside throughout the day, I heard the hoot owl. I'm not even sure if it was one or there was more, but all throughout the day, this owl was hooting. And now, yesterday, there is a stand of pine trees maybe an eighth of a mile west of where the other pine trees were, and now this hoot owl or other ones seem to have relocated to that tree, and it is very, very vocal all throughout the day. And I was just wondering if it's perhaps a territory thing or a nesting time of the year for them.
Well, it may also be a family. Hoot owl is sort of a generic term, which could apply to several different owls. It would be a little more unusual for the bird traditionally called a hoot owl, which is a great horned owl, which has the booming hoo-hoo kind of thing. They'll be calling a little bit later, 2 or 3 months from now. They're one of our earliest nesting birds, so usually by February, they're starting to get wound up. But this time of year, I would expect what you're hearing, especially during the day, to be a family of barred owls, which are also very vocal. But they have a slightly different call with a few more notes to it rather than just a single booming hoot. You could probably listen to either call online if you call them up and see which one you're hearing. But barred owls are a bit more likely, in my experience, to be calling during the day, and they're very vocal in terms of keeping a family group together, or the young ones are finally getting into the act, and so you may be having birds answer themselves back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to if it is barred owls and you listen to the call and you can duplicate, it's fairly easy with a human voice to duplicate the who cooks for you, which is their basic call. You can actually get them communicating with you too.
Okay.
There you go.
Very good. Thank
okay.
You.
Yeah. Good
Thanks,
luck.
Jan, for calling. Appreciate it. Tracy put a note up on our Facebook page in terms of the squirrels and keeping them away. She uses Irish Spring soap. She uses a cheese grater and makes flakes out of it and puts it around an area where she doesn't want the squirrels, and they apparently don't like it.
Interesting. Well, Irish Spring is the most commonly used bar soap to repel deer that are browsing on trees and shrubs, too. But it's also soap in general is very attractive to dogs and other such animals.
Yeah.
So it may be, if there's a dog there, same problem with them licking it up.
We have, we have lots of callers online.
And not much time either.
Not much time.
It's a busy day.
Yeah. Mary in Belleville, hi.
Hi. Mary, did you say? I didn't hear.
Yeah, you're up, Mary.
Thank you. I have a raccoon problem. We have an old barn which has had raccoons. I think we're rid of them, but they've left behind piles of scat. And I've heard that there is a spirochete, a dangerous one, and that we should be... I want to find out if we need to have it tested, or what do I do to get rid of this stuff?
If it's old stuff, if the raccoons have been out for a while, you can, depending on how much there is, use something that controls the dust. I mean, if you get in there with a push broom and start to make a heck of a mess and you're breathing that stuff, that's not good. So first thing is, at a very minimum, good dust mask available from the hardware store that you might use if you're spray painting or something like that. And the next step up from that would be a respirator with filters in it while you're doing the work. And something like a shop vac that basically sucks the stuff up and allows you to dispose of it in kind of units of whatever your capacity of the shop vac is, will minimize the dust and stirring things up. But those steps should give you reasonable protection. And if you're still nervous about it, then of course it's something you could hire out.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Beautiful photo of a snowy owl on the comments section on our Facebook page.
That is a nice one.
Isn't that cool?
That's a cool one.
And I wanted to mention we've got the Deer Hunt 2015 tomorrow.
Yes, the first broadcast of Deer Hunt 2015 is tomorrow, and then there'll be repeated broadcasts through November 16th on the Fox Sports outlets and various public television outlets, so check your local listings. If you're going deer hunting in a couple of weeks, check all the regulations changes. There are quite a few of them again.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be involved with e-registration this year, and of course there are other things in terms of season structure. The holiday hunt's been eliminated, the various county-specific permits and public-private land. Lots of things to think about if you're a deer hunter, but mainly the herd's in pretty good shape. Get out there and have a good time and good luck.
Yeah, and I really do highly recommend the Deer Hunt 2015. Has a lot of that information about the changes in the regulations and such. I think the biggest changes were last year, but there are plenty more this year, too.
There are plenty more, so there are lots of things to pay attention to, and you know, other things to look for. There hasn't been much movement to talk about in the wolf situation.
No.
There hasn't been any move toward delisting, so there's been problems with pets and livestock depredations and that human interaction you mentioned earlier that are very difficult to deal with. There was a fair bit of anxiety over the tribal night hunting privilege, which just went into effect on November 1st, but it's my understanding that there are so many things that the tribal members who wish to hunt at night have to do in terms of firearm safety and training and a few other things that the hunt itself is off to a slow start. But if you live in the Northwoods, you might want to check up on that. And other than that, boy, enjoy these last few days and get outside.
And we'll see you again, Scott. Thank you so much. Scott Craven, wildlife ecologist, our guest. He'll be back in about 2 months, right? Or is it next month?
Back in January.
In January. Yeah. Okay, perfect. He'll be back in January, and I'll be back tomorrow, as a matter of fact. So you can look for me tomorrow, and we'll talk about some scams that are circulating the state, and also about avoiding being the victim of holiday shopping and gift card scams. All that tomorrow. In the meantime, thanks for listening and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.